Why does Mr. Trump writes you Juan in Garden Grove, California?
Hi, Juan.
Hi, Juan. Why does Mr. Trump prefer to bring in Norwegian immigrants? I understand the high education and earning potential, but most European immigrants I have met are quite liberal and tend to vote Democrat in order to get as many benefits as the countries they left. Would not Mr. Trump be diluting his own base, helping out the Democrats with this desire?
Yeah, he probably would be. I mean, anyone can recognize that these Norwegian countries are, what do we call those? That's not...
Would they be social?
Scandinavian, I think.
Scandinavian.
The Scandinavian countries
have a lot of cute girls.
Notoriously socialist.
Yeah, they really
so if Mr. Trump was worried about stacking his base, he wouldn't suggest letting those folks in. But I think the point he was trying to make is... Why do we keep bringing people into this country that have no skills and nothing to contribute? So the compassionate part of him was not showing that day.
Yeah.
Why don't we let more skilled people in? And lots of folks took that as a racist remark, but I don't think it was. I think what he is concerned about, not stacking his voter base, but what he wrote on his red hat. You know,
make America great again.
That's all he's concerned about. Make America great again.
Do you see where Judge... in New York, said that it was okay for, well, I think it's a bar, to bar people if they had the hat on thing. Did you see that?
No,
yeah.
I didn't see
But I
that.
Guess it's, I guess if you own a spot, though, you have...
Oh, yeah.
Don't you have the right to keep anybody
try
else you
it.
Want?
Yeah, try it.
Not good?
No, in New Jersey, there's a bakery here that refused to make a cake for a gay wedding.
Oh, yeah, I read about that one.
Right. Yeah. Can't do that. No, got to make the cake. So you can't refuse service. You can't discriminate against people just because they're wearing a Trump hat or a tutu. You know, it's not within your power. Unless, of course, you're discriminating against...
But can't you say, well, I have a dress code here in my taco stand and there's no tutus. I mean,
yeah,
shouldn't be able to do that. I mean, as a republic,
so,
as a republic.
So if you want to stop everyone from wearing any kind of hat within your establishment,
okay.
I imagine maybe you could get away with it. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is you can't come in here with a red Make America Great Again hat. That's what you, that's a little different.
I see.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. And I think the majority of Americans are starting to catch on to this obvious slant. I mean, look at him with his peace for the Korean Peninsula. Do you believe this?
I know.
Do you believe this?
I know.
So President Obama did a lot less and was nominated for a Nobel Prize right away.
Did you see the South Korean guy said they ought to nominate President Trump for a Nobel Prize?
And you heard what President Trump said.
What did he say?
I caught his tweet yesterday.
Yeah,
it was, peace is prize enough for me.
Oh. See, now that was a good one. Good job, Prez. No kidding. Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
Peace is the prize. I wonder how he got those two guys together. It's only been 60 years. I mean,
yeah. Well,
it's like, come on.
I'll tell you how he did it, by not kowtowing to, think of all the, I mean, he totally demeaned and belittled the Rocket Man, right?
Yeah, little
and
hands.
And then put some sanctions on him and basically ran him around and said, you're not playing with a liberal president now.
Uh-huh.
You're playing with a president who will send the fleet to you.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he have to give in order to gain this peace? He had to promise, or he has to promise, that the U.S. will never invade North Korea.
Oh, is that what he said?
Just that simple.
Well, why not? So who cares?
Well, I mean, apparently they weren't worried about that before. Apparently. But now they're worried about it. So why are they worried about it? This was Richard Nixon's claim to fame, that he kept the entire world thinking he was a nut, you know, and he would do some crazy thing.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one. They actually have tape of him, something about, well, does bomb up or
bomb them back to the Stone Age.
Bomb them back to the Stone Age,
yeah.
Well, I still don't get. I mean, come on, help me out here. How is it that the United States is able to run around the world with more nuclear weapons than anyone?
Right.
Being the only navy, the only country, by the way, never mind, that's ever used
nuclear
weapons on civilians.
Right.
The only one. And go to places like Korea and Iran and say, you know what? You guys don't get them.
Hey, you can't have one.
So hold on a second, because
Yeah. All right, explain this to me like I'm a two-year-old, okay? Yeah. Because there's an element to this thing I just cannot get through my thick head.
That's what I was thinking this morning when I thought about that.
All right, so here it is. It's just this simple.
Is it pretty this simple?
Okay. You know how they're, you know how they don't want you to have an assault weapon? I'm using my air quotes because everything's an assault weapon. But so they don't want you to have a rifle that shoots as much as they can, as theirs does.
Oh, okay.
And that's it's with our own citizens. It's the very same principle, yeah. Well, because I'm going to oppress you, and I'm going to continue to be the biggest bully on the planet, and I wouldn't want you to have the ability to defend yourself against me. I mean, I hate to think that cynically, but that's what it seems like to me. Because otherwise, I'm not threatened by North Korea having a nuclear weapon.
It doesn't bother me. I don't care.
Let them have one. What's the big deal? Well, unless you plan to, again, push them to the point where they want to use it on you. So
of course, you have people like Netanyahu out there. I don't know what he's got against Iran, but I mean, he's out there with PowerPoints and saying they lied. You know, and they.
Did you watch that thing?
No, I didn't.
Oh my! I watched it front to back.
You did. What was it about? Well, tell folks what we're talking about here.
Well, Iran signed this wonderful deal with President Obama.
Yeah.
Another one of those great appeasement deals. Mm-hmm. So we'll give you $180 billion.
Yeah.
And you say that you're not going to build nuclear weapons for the next 10 years.
Good for all. What a deal.
Yeah. What a deal. A lot of it in cash, too, right? Buckets of cash. We had a good time with that when it happened. Okay, so we enter into this arrangement, and it turns out, and Netanyahu and the Israeli intelligence services proved that they never stopped. They stored all of their papers and knowledge in a nondescript building and continued. They denied the existence of these plans, and he pretty much laid it all out. Here's the proof.
But you can't really believe Netanyahu.
Oh, I guess you can't.
I mean, he's like...
Yeah, yeah, no, but...
You know what I'm saying? But you kind of bought the presentation? You thought it was
I did, yeah. Did you? I thought it was a really good presentation in the sense that he, as close as a prosecutor could get to proving a case, he proved that they had no intention of stopping their nuclear program, and that when the 10 years lapsed, they would start right up again.
Oh, I see. They would wait 10 years, though, in theory.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Of course, he's got this whole thing historically, religiously about them, and he's always thought that they're going to try to, you know, kabam them, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where he's coming from. I mean, he really believes it. Obviously,
that's right.
Obviously, right? He really believes it.
And apparently Kim Jong-un believed it too, because, you know, all of a sudden he's willing to let bygones be bygones if you just promise not to invade us.
Yeah.
That's really what
Because they're
we
getting
want.
Hammered all over, aren't they, with
sure
the
they
trade
are.
Sanctions and and China's trying to keep them under control and with the oil. And they don't have, I don't understand why they can't be more self-sufficient there. Is there land that barren? I don't quite get that. It'd be good to go over there and see what they're doing.
Yeah, right.
But they're just commies, I guess. It's a
that's
problem.
That's the bottom line. I mean, communism doesn't work.
It's a problem.
How many times have we tried it?
Oh, yeah. It's just a problem. You commies, you know, cut it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you look at every experiment that's been ever tried with communism.
Just
it just
doesn't
work.
It
can't work. Because human nature wants you to, people want to take it easy.
Yeah.
And the more they think they can take it easy and get away with it, the more they will.
Hmm.
How easy can I take it?
Yeah, which is why.
What was I used to say when I was a kid? If I get it easy, I'll take it twice.
You think?
If they take it easy, if I get it easy, I'm going to double take.
My mom used to say, Patrick, I give you an inch and you take a mile.
Oh, that was my mother too. Yeah.
Did she say that too?
Yeah.
I always remember that
one,
boy.
You take a mile.
Oh, man.
Told you to be home at 8:30. Here it is. 9:45.
Yeah, Mom, but I had a flat tire. Really? Show that to me.
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the reason why China is pretty much going to be probably the capitalist bomb of the world 20 years from now, right?
Yeah, they keep on their current path.
Yeah.
So if they maintain control of their central bank, and if they only think about their internal improvements, that Three Gorges Dam, man, I just can't get over it.
I cannot get over it.
Crazy. And here's an example of productive inflation.
Where they tell folks what you're talking about. They actually print yuan on a computer, and they don't borrow from a central bank, so they don't have debt.
That's right.
And then they do what with it?
Well, in this case, they built the Three Gorges Dam, which is a point in the Yangtze River where it was the perfect place. It's, you know, three adjacent rivers. Mm-hmm. They built this hydroelectric dam that, you know, it's 22,500 kilowatts.
Wow. It's 22 and what is it?
22,500 yeah, megawatts, right.
Megawatts. That's a lot.
That is a lot, yeah. It's a world record. So they get to produce all the energy that they could possibly need for a long, long time.
Clean, too.
Clean energy. Wow. And so they created all of this money to buy the, to build this dam. And then now the dam produces money from now on. So that's a perfect example of productive inflation. We don't do that anymore.
We did that with the Hoover Dam, you told us.
We did, right? At a time when the nation needed it the most. Mm-hmm. And the Hoover Dam has been generating electricity ever since.
But help me out here. So you create yuan. You build the Three Gorges Dam for kabillions of yuan because you pay people, right?
With materials.
And materials, the whole thing. And then the dam produces, and then
that money.
Then people have to pay for the electricity.
Correct.
So why isn't it inflationary?
Well, it's not inflationary. It may be in the short run.
Because you're putting a lot of workers out there with a lot of yuan
money,
to spend on food and TVs and whatever.
But then they have to pay the electric bill.
Right.
And they continue to pay the electric
bill. Which goes back to the person who printed the money.
Correct.
Oh, like that.
It's sort of like a loop, and the revenue from that electric payment is used to retire the debt that created the dam. And since there's no interest,
but there is no debt. They printed the money.
Well, they
printed the yuan.
Correct. They issued bonds. They did it the same way that every other enterprise would do. They issued bonds, and then the central bank created the money and bought the bonds. So they still have to pay it back, per se. But in this instance, they're paying themselves back.
I lost you. Why didn't they just print the yuan and pay the workers? And what did they need bonds for?
Well, you know, you're talking about 180 billion yuan. I think it was like $22.5 billion.
Okay.
If you put all that money into circulation at the same time, you're going to have inflation, no question about it.
Okay.
But their model showed that they would get their money back within 10 years. And in reality, it was 5 years. So within 5 years, that dam had produced enough electricity to pay back the full cost of building it. Now, all of that is profit every single year.
Wow. So. And then they, if they need to, they could take that money and just trash it.
Correct.
You know, just burn it.
Yeah, but they won't need to.
If they have too many yuan out there, right? They can kind of keep the things balanced more, right?
Yeah. They and, you know, having that revenue stream allows them to just have such tremendous income. Mm-hmm. That's the China Development Bank, which financed the whole thing.
Then they can buy dollars and buy Trump Tower.
Or whatever else they
want. Whatever else they want to buy, which they buy a lot of stuff in New York City, right?
That's right. And they're going to continue to do so.
You think?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I got all this extra money.
Oh, yeah. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Andrew Goss, currency historian. Pretty fun stuff, huh? You understand that the way this all works, and you can get a better idea of what you are trading your labor for, these dollars, and then how to maybe protect yourself when you're 20, 30, 40 years from now, what your dollar is going to be able to buy and that kind of stuff. And that's why we do the show. And then you can intertwine geopolitics and the money together, which Andy has said is inextricably tied together. So it's a good deal. It's fun. We're here every Wednesday at 9 o'clock. And Andrew Goss has a company. It is called SDL Inc. Inc. He's in Hawthorne, New Jersey, and also he is in Hilton Head, South Carolina. He's been at this about 35 years or so. He has people that he's been working for him for a long, long time. His partner Fred is in Hilton Head. And They're real family. He trains them, and he just doesn't hire somebody and say, okay, go out and sell some coins. These people understand. Good friend of mine, very close friend of mine, her broker is Donna, which she's great. Been with the company a long time. She doesn't even talk to Andy. She doesn't need to. She knows Andy, and but she talks with Donna, and she trusts her, and Donna's not going to turn her on anything that's dumb, you know. Andy's never been the kind of a company where they're out there, as you hear on radio or on TV, saying, you know, the world's coming to an end, the stock market's going to crash, and it's going to be so by the end of the year, you really need to buy gold. Never done any of that kind of stuff, and you hear them all the time. I don't have a TV, but I can only imagine what's going on television at night, late night TV, when you're eating your Cheetos and drinking a beer or something. It could be. And these are all new, these are all coins. They're just all bullion coins, like Krugerrands and stuff like that, and you're going to pay way more than $1,300 an ounce. Andrew has what they call currency silver, where most of the value is in the coins, are in the gold or silver. And then, of course, numismatics, where most of the value is in the collectible value and the collectible range. So there's a lot of different things you can invest in if you'd like to. You can call Andrew at 800-468-2646, 800-468-2646. And he also has some free CDs. If you mention One Radio Network, he'll hook you up with those and get yourself on the on a kind of leverage in where you can just keep buying a little bit here and there and do it until the cows come home and let's keep doing it. 800-468-2646. Previously, with our friend Brandon Amalani of Shen Blossom.
A good example of this also is like the Hoshu Wu formula. That is that's a new one that came out. It's really good because it's a blood builder. A lot of people don't understand that Hoshu Wu is actually toxic if it's not prepared correctly. So I wanted to come out with one that not only features the Hoshu Wu as the king herb in the formula, but it's prepared of a minimum of 14 days. Usually we try and get 20, 21 days of cooking it. So you can think of it as like it's in a slow cooker with black beans. Huh. And it's basically just cooking down and deactivating some of those liver toxic compounds. So we do use that as like the bulk of the formula, but we basically put a lot of like mature ginseng root, like in our root extract. We have the fermented and hydrolyzed pearl powder, reishi stem, and it's got shudihong, which is like a Romania type family. We got both the prepared warm stuff and then the cool stuff to kind of balance it out in a sense so it doesn't become sticky. If you get a good quality Hoshu Wu that's properly prepared, it definitely has some invigorating qualities to it and makes you feel relaxed, but yet fully vigorous and energized.
Now, that's the kind of Hoshu Wu that you would like, right? Really nice products, as you can hear. If you'd like to order Hoshu Wu or the other products, click on Shen Blossom right there on the front page, OneRadioNetwork.com. Yeah, we're just so jazzed to be working with people like Brandon Amalani, and he's a Chinese medicine fellow, Qigong. And he's working with his teachers, and some of these recipes are like almost kind of secret, and they don't even talk about them a lot because they're from a real spiritual aspect. It's very cool. The 50-year-old ginseng we've talked about with the organic sake. So if you want to get ginseng, this is where you want to go. Don't just go to Amazon and buy some ginseng for 20 or 30 bucks, and you just have no idea where it came from. You know, I have no idea how it was made. No, I have no idea of the components. You just don't know. But you might as well just spend a little more those Federal Reserve notes and get something what you know is cool and great, and it's going to work for you. They have a Manda formula, which is a turmeric formula for pain and cellular repair. Yeah, very anti-inflammatory. That's a great formula on Shen Blossom. He has a PI water filter, large capacity ceramics. He said it's really, really cool. I don't know anything about this one, but you can look at that if you're looking for a water filter. He has Shizandra, goji berries, the wild black sesame butter. Had some of that yesterday. Really good. These formulas and this stuff is just, he's got the reishi mushroom extract, the Adapt medicinal mushroom formula, Shizandra, goji berry, rice sprouts. He's on it, boy. He is on it. And he's got freeze-dried organic Shizandra powder you can put in your smoothies. So this is where you want to go, we think, with herbs and superfoods to really supercharge your body and to keep you going. And you actually eat less food if you want. food bill goes down, and food is, you know, it's kind of challenging now to get really, really clean stuff anyway. Support your farmers markets. But check it out, Shen Blossom, right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Okay, here we are with One Radio Network's presentation of The Real World of Money with a good friend, Andrew Goss, currency historian, and working on his third book, Monetary History of the United States. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. You've told us that Deutsche Bank is one of the oldest banks in the world. Is that right?
That is correct.
Oldest bank in the world? Do you know how many employees they have?
45,000?
97,000.
Oh, my.
Could you imagine? And so there was a big article about, well, they, you know, they laid off 400 bankers in the United States. I thought, wow, they're really going down. And then I keep reading the article. It said, well, they have 97,000. I said, well, that's, how can, what? 97,000? What could they do? I mean, what do they do? Just count the money? I mean,
yeah, right.
I don't even understand that, Andrew.
They're into everything.
Yeah,
so.
Like?
Everything.
Everything.
Everything, yeah. What Goldman is to us, Deutsche Bank is.
Yeah. But, you know, over the years, we've heard such sad news about these guys, like they were going to go bust and blow up, and they had all these derivatives, but they're just hanging on, right?
Well, because they're so,
nimble?
No, connected.
No.
Yes, yes.
They've been around, what, 200 years?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Used to be the central bank of Germany, correct?
Germany, yeah.
Uh-huh.
The Bundesbank.
The Bundesbank. So that's separate from Deutsche?
It is separate.
Kind of like Goldman and whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
One of those things.
I think they were 200 years, right? 1870 is when Deutsche Bank was founded. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice Italian fellow, right? Did that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Bank of America there.
Really?
Yes.
I thought bankers were all German and Jewish. We have an Italian banker?
A.P. Giannini.
I beg your pardon.
A.P. Giannini.
Giannini.
The Bank of America.
Did he really?
Yes, he did.
Good for him.
Yep.
Good for him. Speaking of Italian banks, do you know that the United States is on track to have... let's see, where did I see?
We'll be an Italian bank.
We're going to be the Italian bank, and we keep going. Their GDP to debt ratio, which I know you said it doesn't matter, but we're gonna be worse than Italy in a few years if you just keep going on the same track.
Yep.
Well, Mr. Trump is a big spender. He has generals that are big spenders.
He is
cutting taxes because he wants to make America great again. So... does he care about debt? Does he care about interest payments? Does he care about all this stuff? Or is he just kicking the can down the road? Or what do you think?
Well, he understands debt as a blessing.
Well, good.
So I don't expect that you'll see much compassionate inflation out of President Trump.
What do you mean?
Well, the compassionate inflation is where you create a bunch of money and you give everyone a free cell phone. Or you create a bunch of money.
Oh, wait a minute. That's why I wanted to vote for him. He didn't do that?
Give everyone some food stamps.
Oh.
Or you create a bunch of money and you give people housing assistance.
Uh-huh.
You're helping them. It's compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
Productive inflation is when you create a bunch of money and build a dam. So you can count on President Trump knowing the difference. And I think productive inflation, he doesn't have a problem with.
So could you create a bunch of money... Well, you'd have to borrow it, but, you know, we've already been there this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So you let the Fed create it. You borrow all the money.
Right.
And then you do an infrastructure thing and then charge people by the mile.
Whoops. Yes.
That's not good, though. I don't want to charge people by the mile.
Well, if you get the potholes out of the road and make it easier for me to get where I'm going, I'll pay.
Don't mind paying.
I was driving down to Virginia last week, and right around the D.C. area, they have these high-speed easy pass lanes.
Yeah, we've got them here too.
Well, what they do there is congestion pricing.
Yes.
So you get around 5 o'clock when it's so busy.
It goes up in price, right?
Yeah, it goes up to $7 for a 2 mile ride.
Woo!
But if you while you're zipping along at 55, looking to the right of you, and there's a sea of cars parked
So it's worth $7, right?
To me, it's worth $7. And I thought to myself, there are probably guys that work in D.C. that would pay $70, you know.
Yeah.
It is just the future, that valuable.
Right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's the future.
So we have these transponders that we mount on our car, and the highways install these readers so that when you go through, it recognizes, oh, there's Andy in his car, and let's charge him a toll. So a friend of mine registered a vehicle in South Carolina and discovered, oh, my, it costs $100 more to register an electric vehicle in South Carolina.
Really?
So she asked the lady at the DMV, why is that? And the DMV lady said, well, you don't use any gas, so we don't collect gas taxes. So we're just going to ding you real hard here on the registration. And I understand the challenge. So for them, and not the people, but the states, how are you going to tax an electric car? If your tax has always been based, your highway tax, paying for the road,
gas, right?
On gas, and they don't use gas, how are you going to tax them? Well, I believe they'll put that transponder on your car and charge you for every mile that you drive.
Good for them.
Whether you're electric or gas.
So I paid $3.19 to fill up my little Prius yesterday, $3.19 a gallon. That's been the most it's been in a long time. How much of that do you think that I pay for gas taxes?
Oh, at least $1.25.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I feel better.
You should. And how much of that is actually used to fix the roads? Now, that might not make you too happy.
Yeah, well, they don't do that, you know.
So the Senate bill passed the New Jersey legislature yesterday.
Yeah.
To call property taxes contributions. Don't you like
this? Oh, good.
Remember we talked about this?
Doesn't that make you feel better?
So the federal government has limited the amount of state and local tax deductibility, the so-called SALT deduction, to $10,000. So our brilliant New Jersey legislature said, well, we'll just call everything above $10,000 a contribution. And since you're making a contribution, you can deduct that from your taxes.
No, wait a minute. Oh,
yes,
really?
Charitable contribution, yes.
No, that's not going to work, though, right?
Well, it passed our Senate. They think it's going to work. So I'm sure this governor will sign it because it was his idea.
Well, they're going to challenge that, right?
Yeah, we'll see what how the IRS deals with it. That'll be the question.
So they're actually saying...
it's not property taxes. It's a charitable contribution.
Everything to what? Over. To who?
To the town that you're paying the taxes.
But this town's not a 501c3.
I'm betting they're going to allow them to create these entities. I downloaded the bill, and as soon as the show is over, I'm going to read it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they'll find a way around that one.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
That's what they find a way around, yeah. Yes. Let's call what people earn for what they trade for their labor, let's call it income. And then institute an income tax.
Well, don't get us started on that one.
Yeah.
What was that Supreme Court decision?
1894.
What was the name?
Pollock.
Pollock. Pollock versus U.S., right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
He sued him. What did he sue him for?
Well, for you're not taking my money.
Yeah.
I earned it.
I earned it.
I didn't make a profit.
I didn't
have a gain here.
All I did was go to work.
I just exchanged my labor for an equal amount of money.
Mm-hmm. And he won.
Yeah, he won.
Wow.
The Supreme Court defined in that year what income is. Profit severed from capital. You put up a dollar, you made a dollar, that dollar is taxable. You put up a dollar, you didn't make anything, well, there's no tax. You exchange your labor for money, well, that's an even trade, there's no gain. What a worm can.
To toothpaste, but you don't want to really try that at home.
Oh, no, no, but it is...
but it's interesting.
It is interesting. It's interesting
fodder,
study.
Right. It's interesting study.
Because this is a voluntary tax system that we have, after all.
I volunteer every year, boy.
And probably wise to do so.
Wise to do so. Treasury Department said yesterday that it has cut over 300 standing and proposed rules with a focus on the Internal Revenue Service. Well, what could that possibly be? 300 rules?
Oh, goodness, they have rules on top of it.
I mean, what could that possibly be?
You can have this, but you can't have that. You know, like, you can imagine. Read the IR code. It's
no, thanks. They're going to wipe away the 298 IRS Deadwood rules. I don't know what that is.
I don't even know what that is.
I have no idea what that is. But it sounds kind of good.
Yeah.
Does it sound kind of good?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, to me, the biggest crime is the inflation tax. So you buy a house for $14,000.
Yep.
And 30 years goes by, and now the house is worth $250,000.
Yeah.
Not because the house is worth more, but because the dollars are worth less. And suddenly you're viewed as making some sort of a gain. There's no gain there.
It's that's just true, isn't it? Right? When you think about that?
Yeah.
That's true. No, wait a minute, though. Just to play devil's advocate here, the house has gone up in value because people have moved in there and there's a lot of people buying houses, too.
No? There is a little of that. But for the most part, yeah, it takes the same amount of labor and the same amount of brick and mortar materials, mm-hmm, that it did, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah, but trees raise their prices, you know.
Well, tree prices, yeah, they've certainly gone. Mm-hmm. So as the dollar has become worth significantly less.
Yeah.
So, you know, in 1967, you're working for a buck an hour. And now in 2017, it's 15 bucks an hour.
So it's already a tax when they inflate the monetary system. That's one tax.
That's correct.
So then your house goes up in value, and then you get taxed again.
Yes, especially if it's an investment property. If it's an individual's house, you're allowed that one-time deduction.
One time?
Yeah.
Each time when you move to a different spot?
Yeah, I think it's when you sell your primary residence, the first 250 or 500,000 is, mm-hmm, deductible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if you're on hold, caller, stay right there, and we're going to get to you in a second. This ties right in, so I'll go ahead and get to it. Because of that new Trump tax thing where they limited the amount of property tax you could write off to 10 grand, correct?
Yes.
800,000 people are moving to get out of New York and California because of the taxes, and they're all coming to you know where?
Texas.
Texas.
As long as they don't stop in South Carolina on the way.
Jeez.
Because you know what's going to happen? They're going to move down there and bring their big government, big tax mentality with them. They're going to vote a bunch of liberals in and turn everything into Austin.
Well, that's what the blue people want.
Well, right? You know, that's like what they're going to get.
They'd like to turn Texas blue for sure.
Yeah.
You know, well, and impeach, yep, Trump. You know that.
Yeah, oh, sure.
You think?
It's their number one goal, yeah, impeach Trump.
You know, don't you find it fascinating that he's out there actually saying that? And have you heard him say that?
Sure.
He said they want to just win the midterms, and they're going to do whatever they can to win the midterms. You know why? Because they want to impeach me.
That's it.
I think it's cool that he's actually saying it. I think
that he recognizes
it. Yeah,
it.
Put it out there, man. Just
and if America lets it happen, I'll be sadly disappointed. Because I guarantee you that if the Democrats win control, if you're a Democrat,
yeah,
and you want to impeach Trump, why, then get your butt out there and get to work, because if they win the Democratic...
They will impeach him.
They will impeach him.
That doesn't mean they kick him out. That just... Impeach does not mean...
Indict.
That means indict him, really.
That's what it means,
so, but
yep,
then they'd have to prove in front of the Supreme Court, right?
No, in front of the Senate.
I thought the Supreme Court is there, too, no?
No, it's no. The Senate.
Oh, it's, yeah, the Senate. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, no. It's not good.
Is it a majority?
It's a supermajority.
What
so
does that mean?
Well, 2/3. You need...
well, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough...
But you have to have something like treason, right?
Or high crime and
high
misdemeanor.
High crime and misdemeanor.
Yeah, that's right.
Does that include Smokey or whatever her name is?
No, it doesn't include Smokey.
Smokey whatever, and the Bear or whatever her name
whatever
is.
Whatever her name is.
Yeah. Yeah. High crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah.
So I guess Mueller is going to try to do the obstruction thing, right?
You get out of town.
Well, that's his latest big headline this morning. Did you see it?
No, I saw it.
Did you see it on Drudge? Mueller may subpoena Trump. Obstruction. Key focus. Serious threat.
Good luck.
Good luck with that.
Subpoena the president.
Well, I think the only thing he said, according to even Comey, was, what did he say? Something like, I don't know.
Yeah. What? Could you take it easy?
Could you take it easy? That's not obstruction. You were having dinner, for God's sake. Come on.
Yeah.
I don't. Okay, let's take this call. I'm gonna need to be an attorney next lifetime. I could do good. Okay, what's your first name? Where are you calling from, please?
My name is Patrick, and I'm calling from Murray, Utah.
Uh-huh. Okay, Patrick, what's up with you this morning?
Well, I had a question for that's a little off track of how
no,
much
not
of
with
the
you. I wouldn't be ever
gold
be off
rush
track.
in California ended up in the coins that you are now selling to us, dear Andy?
I like the question. Okay, how is the gold rush in California? Oh, the gold they got out of the hills, you mean?
Yeah, golden.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, now that's a good question. Yeah, how did it get into the coins?
All right, well, there's gold in them there hills. That was a that was a plea from the mayor of Dahlonega, Georgia, in 1840. Actually 1848, when all the miners from the first American gold rush, which was in the South, were packing up and leaving, heading for the California gold fields. And the mayor famously pointed to the hills that surround Dahlonega, Georgia, and said, "There's gold in them there hills. Don't go to California. Stay here and mine it here." Uh-huh. And Dahlonega and Charlotte, well, their mints quickly closed down, and a new one erupted in San Francisco. And that, of course, is how the gold got into our coins, because they would set up the mint right next to the mines. So the San Francisco Mint, of course, made all of the California gold coins from that era. And the Carson City Mint, of course, was set up next to the Comstock Lode in Nevada to coin all of the silver.
So the Treasury would
open a mint.
They would exchange dollars for this gold?
Yes.
Why would the miners, after they digging through the rubble all night, trade for dollars? Because I guess they had to buy whiskey and stuff.
Well, right? Yes.
No, but back then you could use gold, couldn't you?
Well, it was the free coinage of gold, which is what the mints represented.
Free coinage?
Yes. So you could bring your gold to the San Francisco Mint, and they would give you an equivalent amount of gold coins already made into coin form, which was the problem when you go into a hotel in San Francisco and all you have is powder gold, or, you know, you put a pinch on the counter and maybe you get a drink of sarsaparilla. But having a coin of a known fineness and quantity allowed you to make sure that you were only paying what was due. And so the mints served that purpose. And they did it by assaying your gold and striking it into a recognizable form, a 1, a 2.5, a 5, 10, or after 1849, a $20 gold piece.
What fun.
Yeah, big fun. So by 1855, I would argue that more than half of the gold circulating in the nation came from the California gold fields.
How do you do, Patrick? Are you satisfied with your answer?
Well, I am, but now I want to ask about the new gold rush, which is marijuana.
Okay, yeah, all right.
The you know, it's interesting that this is something that could be grown. You don't have to mine it.
Right.
And it has some benefits, which are probably better than the gold coins themselves.
Oh, the health benefits, you mean. And what's your question about it? Do you have a theory about it?
No, I'm asking, you know, is Andy going to start selling hemp gold coins?
Oh, I see, hemp gold coins. Probably not.
Doubtful.
Thanks,
because
Patrick.
If it could hold its substance, right? So that was the thing why gold was chosen.
Yeah.
Because you could put a gold coin in a box for 500 years and pull it out and it's still exactly
the
same.
Or at the bottom of the ocean.
At the bottom of the ocean.
That's
like
a great example.
Central
yeah.
America.
Yeah.
So in the case of hemp, if you stored your wealth in hemp.
That'd be tough.
Yeah. It goes bad. I mean, that's the bottom
line.
Plus
your grandchildren would smoke it.
Right.
That's a problem.
But we talk, or maybe your children, or maybe yourself. So the four ways to create wealth, remember that from many years ago shows?
Four ways,
right? Mining.
Mining.
Farming. Fishing.
Fishing.
And manufacturing.
Manufacturing.
So Patrick's correct, right? You plump these seeds in the ground, and all of a sudden, out of the ground comes production.
Wacky tobacky.
Yeah, production.
Mm-hmm.
Something that someone else values.
Yeah.
So it does fit in the category. That's why it's so good for the nation. You know, you make clothing out of hemp. You make a rope out of hemp. You make Henry Ford even made his car fenders out of hemp.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
He boiled up the hemp, made fuel for the car. You know, that it's an amazing
and
plant.
Then the healing properties, of course, is going to be huge, man.
Yeah.
So the challenge, I think, is, I don't want to be negatory here, but you give these politicians an income stream with taxing wacky tobacco or whatever, you know, they just go ahead and do the same dumb stuff with it, don't they? I mean, they never really get it.
It's not like they're going to get a conscience.
No.
And worse yet.
That's a problem.
They, you know, like in New Jersey, we're gonna legalize marijuana.
Are you?
But you have to, well, according to this governor, I think we are. But you're going to have to sign up. Like right now, you could sign up and get a medical marijuana card.
Oh, you can. Okay.
You can. Mm-hmm. But if you need medical marijuana, you must have some sort of a disability, so then you can't own a firearm. And who knows what else they'll attach to.
Ah, yeah, those adhesion strings. Contracts.
Yes, right. Those nasty adhesion contracts.
Yeah, I think it brought me back to stories my Uncle Tony used to tell about the mint in San Francisco with the powder, you know, and then doing it in the coins, and you just have the gold dust, you know, in your little bag there. Because my Uncle Tony told me about the time he was at this bar in San Francisco, buying a girl a drink and, you know, put out the powder there, and she snorted it, you know. It was terrible. It's like, just come on. But Uncle Tony was a card, you know.
He
told me these stories. Let's see what other kind of emails we have here. Oh, my goodness. Okay. The answer is more debt now. Let's just hope the Martians have a vault that holds their gold, and they will let us borrow a bunch of paper backed by it.
Yeah, somebody.
Somebody, help
somebody,
us.
Somebody, help us.
Help us. Please.
Yeah, no, Gresham's law says that good money, in the case of gold-backed money or gold coin money, is driven out of circulation by bad money. So given the choice, people will spend their unbacked money and save their backed money. So it's almost as if nobody can go on the gold standard unless everyone does. We haven't had a gold standard in this country since 1971.
Mm-hmm.
And look what's happened to the value of the dollar since then. Mm-hmm. And when it's $35 to the ounce when Nixon closed the gold window, what is it today, 1310?
13 and some change, right?
Yeah. That's, you know, remarkable when you measure it in that way.
Yeah.
So you should be able to see what's happened to your purchasing power since 1971. That's like 30 times, folks. So is it any surprise? And when you think about the dollar minimum wage then and the $15 wage today, you can see how you really should be making $30 an hour today. If you want to keep up with the same inflationary trends that has driven gold to 13 and change, then you need to be making $30 an hour to make the same amount of money as a person from 1971 making a dollar an hour. Now, I think moving forward that our kids are going to laugh at their kids, right? It's going to be, oh, you guys, when I was a kid, I would work for $15 an hour. And now you're demanding 30 or 45 or 90. And so you don't understand. It's just so much the same way as we talk about the nickel cup of coffee and the 25-cent gallon of gas and the dollar an hour wage. You know, they'll be talking about the $5 cup of coffee and $5 gas and the $15 wage. So it's intergenerationally, we lose the meaning of what a dollar was. And that just plays right into the hands of those who issue and create money. So they take a certain portion of your purchasing power through direct taxation, and then they take the rest of it through inflation. So if you're not defending yourself against inflation, then you're exposed to this sort of debasement of the currency. Well, China might be accused of being a currency manipulator, but the dollar is still the most preeminent currency on the planet, and I would argue one of the most manipulated.
Back in 71, I believe the French fries at McDonald's were 15 cents, if I recall.
15 cent burger.
Today they're $1.89, I think,
right,
average.
Right.
So is that kind of, did we have,
well, we,
does that make sense?
If you look at how much more efficient the McDonald's restaurant got.
Well, yeah, because now they're using frozen fries, and we actually peeled the potatoes.
Peeled the potatoes and cut them and then sold them for 15 cents.
Right.
So these are the economies of scale that come from, and you can count on this in any given economy. So the price of an item starts at one point. If the money is sound, then the value of that item actually falls over its production life. So if the dollar had been sound the entire time, now you could probably get McDonald's fries for a nickel, right, instead of 15 cents, because they squeezed out all the efficiencies that they could in the manufacturing process, actually getting the fries on the plate to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is, you can count on this in just about any method of manufacture. What has thrown us off and why we expect prices to rise every year is because it's the value of the dollar that's falling every single year. which causes prices to rise. So it's the tail wagging the dog, not the other way around.
And the dollar falls every year systematically because people around use the dollar. They get it that there's more out there, not backed by anything but F-16s.
You would hope.
Pretty much.
Is that pretty much
how it works?
It is. We've heard the talk about depreciating dollars, but they were trying to institutionalize it there for a time. It's what led me to that little tongue-in-cheek thing that a dollar should come with an expiration date. But they were actually considering that for a time, that we're going to issue the dollar on this date. If you store it and don't spend it, it's going to be worth 90 cents on this date, and then so forth. So the quicker you spend it and get it back into circulation, the more value you'll get out of it. The longer you hold it, the less it's going to be worth. This is almost institutionalized. So storing your wealth in dollars is a recipe for, well, being robbed by inflation.
LJ's up in New York near you, Andy. And he said, on this idea of a world currency, reserve currency, I've heard that the SDR could be the new one. Does Andy think this is possible? And what exactly is the SDR? Enjoy the show. Thank you. Okay, LJ. Good.
That's actually a great question.
Great question, because you've talked about the SDR a bit.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us first what that is, and then you'll opine if it's going to be the world reserve currency.
Well, the SDR is the IMF's currency unit. So they created it in 1969 so that member countries could have a currency unit to exchange with each other, sort of the world unit, if you will. And it plays into the official reserves. But what is an SDR? What's in it? That's the real tricky point. Because the SDR is the dollar, the Japanese yen, the pound sterling, the euro, and now just recently the Chinese renminbi, however the heck you say that. We say yuan. It's much easier. So the basket of currencies that makes up the SDR is controlled by the same people, the euro, the dollar, the yen, the pound sterling. So that would not be a replacement. It would be the same thing. And I don't think the SDR, the IMF, the rest of the world would not sit still for this. It's bad enough already that the dollar has gotten this preeminent perch. They want to make sure no other currency gets it. So I don't think the SDR is going to take the place of the dollar. And if it does, even if it does, remember, it's made of dollars. So you can't have one without the other. And that's really the end result.
Sorry, I was scratching my head.
I bet.
So how about if countries would start pegging to this SDR thing? Would that make sense?
Well, it might.
Than the dollar.
Right, because you have a basket of currencies. Right,
right? You have a basket. You have four or five, right?
Yeah,
and you, as you said, the biggest player in there is the dollar. So
correct.
The boys are controlling the SDR. They're not going to let this thing, you know, put a fly in the ointment.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter what. Right?
You got that right.
They're going to protect their little brand.
Yes.
Dollar Inc.
Dollar Inc.
Yeah.
Which is what the IMF was set up to protect.
Oh, good for them.
Dollar Inc. So the dollar by itself is 58 cents, I believe. Yes, 58 cents of the SDR.
Oh, is it 58%?
58% of the SDR. The pound sterling is at, you know, 0.08. The Japanese yen is at 11. And the Chinese yuan is only 1%. So it is the dollar is the preeminent number, followed by the euro. And as we've pointed out in many shows in the past, the euro and the dollar are owned and controlled by the same people. So between those two, I mean, that makes up nearly 95 cents out of the dollar.
Remember a couple of years, was it a year ago or a year and a half ago, Andrew, that when the IMF decided to let China in on the deal,
right,
that almost all of the cut came from the other boys and not the dollar.
That's right.
It was very clever.
They only got 1%. I mean, they didn't get any.
Is that all they get is 1%?
Yeah.
The whole thing?
Yeah. So.
Well, but they're in, and that's what they wanted, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you look at it in dollar equivalents, so if you convert everybody's currency to the dollar, right, mm-hmm. then the Chinese yuan makes up a 0.16, mm-hmm. the euro 0.46, and the dollar 0.58. Uh-huh. So it's not going to happen that the dollar is going to get diluted by adopting the SDR. It would cement the dollar's position. So I don't see that as a danger. But I know a lot of people, one in particular, I think it's Jim Rickards.
Jim Rickards, yeah.
Yeah, has been promoting this concept of the SDR.
Is he out there?
As the world currency unit. I don't think so. I don't think there's anything right now threatening the dollar's perch as the preeminent currency in the world.
10-year U.S. treasuries are more about 3%, right?
Yeah, 2.9.
And there's never been more short bonds ever.
Ever.
Is this ever? Tell folks what that means.
Well, it just means that the traders in the know understand that if you sell a bond today that you can deliver at any time in the future, that you're going to be able to buy that bond in the future for less than you would today. So to them, shorting the bond means they can say, I owe you a bond, and when I give it to you, it's going to be worth less than it is right now. The person that's on the other side of that trade believes it'll be worth more. So right now, all the savvy traders, to a man, I mean, it'd be hard to, because you don't want to fight the trend. It's obvious, it's clear that the Fed is going to raise interest rates.
I mean, they've said so.
They've pretty much given
you. Of course, you never can believe what they say anyway.
But, that's true.
Right.
So let's examine what happens if they do. So if you raise the interest rate that current bonds are paying, then that renders every bond issued before that worth less.
Less, right. Because somebody says, well, I can get a 3% bond just buying from the Gov right now. Why do I want yours at 2.8?
Correct.
Duh.
And the answer is because you discount it to face value.
Oh, so I got to sell it to you for less because mine's at 2.8, but I want to sell my bond so I can go to, you know,
whatever.
You know, yeah.
Retire. Pay your retirees.
Yeah.
Your pension fund.
Yeah.
So the traders say, well, then let's just short these bonds.
The ones that are in existence now.
Correct. Okay. Because as soon as the Fed raises interest rates, their value will go down.
And so if I short the bonds, I'm going to make money when their value goes down, correct?
Correct, yeah.
They short that on derivative thing or whatever?
Yes, yeah. Options, futures, and contracts.
Oh, man. So that's the deal. Well, I mean, it's an obvious trade, isn't it?
It is an obvious trade. Just like the reverse was an obvious trade. Mm-hmm. So when rates were 5 or 6%, and going long bonds meant that every bond that you bought that paid 5%, as interest rates went down, the face value of that bond went up. So I've got a bond that yields 5%. The Treasury is only paying 3% now. So if you want my bond that yields 5%,
it's gonna cost you, dude.
Yeah, you got to pay me more.
I can only imagine what it was like in the 70s when gold was, what, $35 an ounce. Rose to $800 an ounce. Pretty big. It doesn't sound like a lot, 800, but look at the difference, right?
Yeah.
In
well,
10
that
years,
was,
right?
That was the move.
The big move.
The big move went from 35 to 850 just on bullion. So if you would have bought bullion at 35 bucks an ounce and then sold it at 850, at that time, Treasury bonds were yielding 15%.
So the amount of people that were short bonds in the 70s, they were making a lot of money.
Well,
right?
Yeah. As interest rates went.
But who's on the other side of that trade? I mean, I don't get it. Where it's obvious that they're going to continue to raise interest rates, and Jimmy Carter's in the White House. He's got a sweater on, whip inflation now, whatever. You remember that?
Right.
And so, why would somebody take the trade if you wanted to short bonds? Why would you even stay on the other end? You know which way they were going.
Well, even now, there are people who do not believe that the Fed will raise interest rates.
Why is that?
Because that's just the nature of markets. That's what makes horse races, Patrick.
Yeah.
I think this horse is going to win. You think that horse is going to win. Mm-hmm. So for every person that thinks interest rates are going up.
There's another person out there. Yeah.
Maybe not another one, but, you know, there are enough of them.
I guess it's like that in physical reality. Nothing exists except in the relation to its opposite, right?
That's right.
Yeah, hills and valleys and ups and downs and light and dark and the whole thing.
Plus and minus. Mm-hmm.
Well,
Republican and Democrat.
I would be worried if I saw this headline thinking that Bill Gates might be a globalist, because I'm sure he's not. Because he's warning millions could die if the U.S. doesn't prepare for the coming pandemic.
Yeah.
Bill Gates, who dispenses vaccines like they're
candy
around the world that we know are dangerous for people. He's out there going, you know, he said the government really is falling short in their preparations, the nation and the world, for a significant probability of a large and lethal modern-day pandemic occurring in our lifetime.
Like the 1917 flu pandemic.
Man, oh man, Bill.
Swept the earth and wiped out so many millions of people that, well, it took a long time to recover.
But even that story was never like it was really told. You don't even get into it. You know, a lot
probably
of,
not.
A lot of spooky stuff going on.
All I know is on the money side, they told people that the recesses of the coin held the virus.
Is that what they did?
And so you were better off to trade in your coins for paper money, which Americans did by the legion.
So what's up? The Turkish government, people are asking for their dollars, people in Europe, I mean, they're asking for their gold, and China and Russia are buying gold. In the United States, they're being very tight-fisted with, well, not the Fed, right?
Correct.
How did the Fed end up with all of that gold in their basement?
Yeah.
That was pretty, that must have been a interesting party.
Well, yeah.
They went to a gold party, like a Tupperware party, and said, we want the gold? Or what?
Believe it or not, World War II
convinced
the world that they should store their gold in New York.
Ah.
Which was deemed as the only safe place.
Because that old nasty Hitler were going to
get
him, right?
Yes, he was running all over the continent.
Mm-hmm.
So if you store your gold in New York, it'll be safe
while
this war goes on. And they never bothered to get it back.
And there's never-ending conjecture or theories about how much of the 8,000 tons of the United States, or the Treasury. Actually, they call it the Treasury, but what's it doing at the Fed?
Well, because it's pledged. It's pledged against the note issue. So technically, it doesn't belong to us.
Who's it pledged to?
The Federal Reserve.
Wait a minute. So the Feds own the 8,000 tons?
I would argue that they do.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
No. So no... Yeah, no wonder they don't want to give it back to the people.
That's right.
Jeez.
That's the only thing that a gold audit at the Fort Knox would reveal. That even though there are these blocks and bricks of bars sitting
here. Which Mr. Mnuchin said, I saw them.
Yeah, no, they're here.
But it does. Who owns them?
But they don't belong to us. That's the key.
But Andrew, even at 8,000 tons, we've done the math. It's nothing, right? 8,000 tons time, whatever. We've done the math. And 25 trillion about, you know, give or take a trillion or two of dollars.
Yeah.
A gold would be, I don't know, what did we do the math? What was it, $50,000?
It was $50,000.
I think it was $50,000. Yeah.
That's right.
So that ain't happening anytime soon, gold back.
No, I don't see us heading back on a gold standard.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be very difficult to put us back on a gold standard.
People keep talking about there's no exit strategy for the central banks. And we're talking about IMF, ECB, Bank of Japan, Federal Reserve Bank. What are some of the other ones? Whatever.
That's enough. You hit all the big ones.
So why do you need an exit strategy if the way you make money for a living is to make money?
Make money.
Yeah. Well, why do you even need an exit strategy? Why don't you just keep going until people catch on?
Right? Well, you run the risk of debauching the currency. So when the crisis in 2008 occurred, the Fed at the time had very little intervention in the markets. They had less than $1 trillion on their balance sheet.
Right.
That meant they had $1 trillion worth of bonds in the vault against which they'd issued $1 trillion worth of Federal Reserve notes. All during the crisis, they kept adding bonds and bills to their treasure trove until it rose to $4.5 trillion. Now, the exit strategy, as people are questioning, would be to sell those bonds and take the money back and extinguish it.
And just burn it up.
Burn it up.
Yeah.
And then you would get the $4 trillion back out of circulation and thereby reduce or eliminate the risk of inflation, which is what would have happened under normal market conditions. So this is why people are talking about an exit strategy for the central banks. Like, they've created all this money. How do they now intend to take it back out of circulation to regain some of the strength in the dollar? And my answer is, they don't. They don't intend to withdraw it at all. They will leave it in circulation.
Because they feel like they can control the inflation somehow, somewhere.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by raising interest rates. Mm-hmm. So we've grown used to all this extra money. Pulling it out now would just re-trigger a crisis like a 2008 proportion. So, and in fact, it was no less than Jamie Dimon that questioned the efficacy of withdrawing this money from circulation. And we've never tried it before. And doing it now would be a foolhardy gesture. Mm-hmm.
This could be a big story. Hong Kong's government confirms Bitcoin lampshades poses only medium-low risk in financial crime.
Yeah.
So lampshades will probably go up today if you want to get in on the deal, get in on the trade.
No, if you want to speculate, that'd probably be a good place to do it.
Pretty good place to speculate, I guess. Yeah. Or you go to the horse races, you could do that.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that that series Luck about horse racing? That was pretty good. But they closed it down after a year because horses kept getting killed doing the thing. It's terrible. Well, Andrew, I guess we've been as politically incorrect as we can for a couple of hours.
Yes.
You got anything else
offensive
on your plate that you would like to
me?
What's going on for you?
Well, we talked about it last week. I bought these $20 gold pieces.
Yeah.
In the absence of truly rare coins, these things kind of fit the bill.
Oh yeah, yeah, the ones that they're
the bulk of their values in the gold. Yeah, yeah. It's
of course,
not
we're
so much
one radio network people.
Yeah,
yeah, because we're not billionaires. Like
so, that. I'm loaded for bear.
Are you?
And going through my list, and we have a few rare coins, but boy, the supplies there are getting really thin.
And what do you call these coins? These would be more
semi-numismatic. Yeah.
Like
the bulk of the value is in their gold or their silver content.
Mm-hmm. Could one purchase one of these if they said, well, I can only really think, I got to do something in 2 years. Could I keep them for 2 years and do okay?
Sure.
Could you?
They're very subject to the price of gold.
To the price of gold. We kind of think it's going to go up.
If
right?
gold goes up, they go up. If gold goes down, they go down.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think like I do that the price of gold is going to rise,
you think?
Then these are these are a great place to park your money.
And what are they called? If they call up there and want to talk to somebody, just semi-numismatic,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or the coins that Andy was talking about on the radio.
And they're $20 gold pieces.
That's the thing.
Correct.
The big 1 ounce gold pieces.
They're kind of fun.
And I've been buying them for a good month and a half now, so I'm really loaded. I have quite
got a lot. That's cool. So that's what the reason why they put the little studs in the Levi's, right?
Amen. Yeah.
Right?
To keep the gold from tearing the pockets off your pants. Levi Strauss put a rivet there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we all started accepting paper and representing the gold.
And now,
it's electronic.
Yeah. You know? Now there's lampshades, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Lampshade will rip your pockets out.
Or the Petro.
Or the Petro. Or the
it'll rip your pockets out in another way.
Or the Metro. The Metro or the Petro. Yeah. Where do you think this, just to end it, where do you think this whole crypto thing is going to play out? Do you think they'll just have these exchanges ongoing and people just keep buying and selling them and for like a, just for an whatever kind of going to Vegas kind of thing? You think that's what's going to happen?
Well, no, because I think once you strip away the benefits, I mean, like it or not, most of the people that use these cryptocurrencies are trying to evade the long arm of regulatory and taxing authorities.
Probably.
Most likely.
Mm-hmm.
And once you take away that advantage, then I don't see any reason at all for holding crypto of any kind.
So you think the NSA and the Gov and the FBI, they're going to get in there and they're going to have access and know everything?
Well, yeah, because the IRS is going after the exchanges.
Yeah, they are.
That you, right?
Oh, yeah. No.
So when you
We've seen stories about it.
Sure.
Yeah, you sell those things in 2016? Well, guess what?
Yeah.
You owe us.
You thought nobody knew, but we all know, and you owe us. Yeah.
And the interesting thing about blockchain, it is transparent in a sense,
right?
If you get in, and it's kind of like locked in all of the information. It's very
easy.
It doesn't go away. It's very easy to get. It's not like
That's
you can
right.
go in and start shredding your things like Mr. Trump's attorney. No, just kidding. I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that. Sorry. Yes. Sorry, Mr. Trump. So that, and you say once you think that all kind of comes around and goes around, it'll be a less of a, I don't know how much their market cap is today anyway. It's not that really big.
Well, now there's
deal.
So many. There's so many.
Well, there's like 100
cryptocurrencies
or something like that.
Yeah, thousands of them.
Isn't that amazing?
So like every other innovation, some will falter,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know which ones. So when we had the era of free banking in the United States in the 1840s, after Andrew Jackson killed the Second Bank of the United States, then it became legal for anyone to open a bank and issue banknotes subject to the laws of fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was a great many banks issued these notes and then disappeared. And so it got to the point by the mid-1840s where you were better off to have a counterfeit note of a good bank than to have the real note of a bad bank. At least the counterfeit notes elicited some sort of confidence. Whereas a brand new note on a bad bank, everyone knew that was bad money. So folks had to know the difference between which types of banknotes to accept and which to not accept. And that's what's happening with the cryptocurrency. Some of it's going to be very good. Some of it's going to be very bad. And you don't know how to tell the difference.
Well, Mr. Goss, it's always an honor and pleasure to have you. Have a fun day up there in Jersey.
I will.
Jersey, keep an eye on your property taxes. They may go up.
Oh, they will.
They will go up.
No doubt.
Folks would like to talk to you, 800-468-2646.
Right? That's right. Yeah. All right. Give me a call.
All right. In a week, we'll do it again. Thank you, sir.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Andrew Goss, currency historian. His number is 800-468-2646 if you'd like to talk to Mr. Goss. Well, we will see you tomorrow. We're going to do a cool thing about it's not what you eat, it's what you absorb. I think we also have a little surprise I'm working on, and I put a couple of new videos on the front page of One Radio Network that I think you'd like. Didn't mention Ken today, but we have a video with Ken Rolla, and he talks about the scalar waves and his golden pyramid thing. You might want to watch that, and that's kind of fun. And then we heard about a veterinarian that we'd like to get on the show. His name is Dr. Rob. He testified to amend the rabies law up there in the Northeast or so. It's pretty amazing, this whole thing. And they actually took away his license. Whoops. Took away his license. Boy, it's amazing. And all he wanted to do was do titers, right? In other words, you can just have your dog tested and they can see if you've got enough antibodies for the rabies. And so, yeah, the vaccine thing for animals is similar. So be careful, but we talk about it. So we'll see you tomorrow. I love you all very much. Thanks for your ongoing support.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is One RadioNetwork.com.